The monsters came at night. First came their calls, distant and eerie. Their wide, fluting voices echoed down the valley, complicated as a symphony and mindless as a cricket swarm. The deepest of them sang in a range below human hearing, subsonic tremors that people in the township felt more than heard. Then, the night scopes showed movement. It could start as far as 20 clicks away, or as near as 2. The science team still hadn't figured out what they did during the daylight hours, or during the long, empty days when they seemed to disappear. But the feeling that they rose up from the planet's flesh with the darkness made the approach feel almost supernatural. Like the town had offended some nameless local god by coming here. It was only a mystery, though. They'd figure it out eventually, if they survived. After the movement, assuming the monsters kept to their same pattern, their chorus would go on until the little retrograde moon started rising in the west. Then it would stop. Then they would come.
"They'll aim for the breach," Leeward said, pointing with his chin.
The perimeter wall was constructed out of prefabricated plates of carbon silicate lace scavenged from ship hulls. The braces were titanium and compression-resistant ceramic. The place where the monster had come through last time looked like God had come down and pressed against the wall with his thumb. 10 meters of shattered plate and bent brace they'd shored up with local trees and scrap.
"Might aim for the breach. Might not," Yandro said with a slow shrug.
He was the head of construction and maintenance and a bear of a man.
"What do you think, Nagata?"
Philip shrugged. His mouth was dry, but he tried to keep the fear out of his voice.
"Wall didn't slow them down much, even when it was intact."
Yandro grinned, and Leeward scowled. The town was the second largest on the planet Janna, at 436 people. It had been named Emmerling Voss Permanent Settlement Beta, but everyone called it Beta. And with the ring gate to anywhere else broken, that meant Beta was its name from now on. Without the gates, the corporate headquarters of Emmerling Voss was just shy of 23 light years away. Alpha Settlement, with more than 1,000 people, was 7,500 clicks to the south. With no orbital shuttles or reliable ground vehicles, it might as well be 7 million. And Alpha had gone silent when the ring gates shut down. Whether it was just a radio malfunction or something larger was an open question. And the residents of Beta had more immediate problems. There were 2 dozen people drawn from different work groups all along the north wall. Leeward was in charge there. Another group was along the east, with lookouts and runners at the west and south in case something unexpected happened. In case the monsters changed the direction they'd traveled up to now. Philip considered the faces of the others stationed below the wall, finding signs in each of them of the same fear he felt. Almost each of them. Yandro and the 4 men from the maintenance team seemed relaxed and at ease. Philip wondered what drugs they'd taken. Leeward hefted his torch, a titanium rod with a solid, waxy mat of the local moss-like organism on a spike at one end. When he spoke, it was loud enough for everyone to hear.
"When they come, if they come, we deflect them. Don't go at them straight on. Just turn them gently aside so they don't get to the walls. We aren't fighting them. We're just hurting."
He nodded while he said it, like he was agreeing with himself. It made him seem uncertain.
"Should just shoot them," Yandro said.
It was a joke. Everyone knew the town had run out of rifle cartridges and the reagents they'd need to print fresh ones.
"We keep them outside the walls," Leeward said. "But if they get in anyway, Get out of the way.
He pointed up into the south at the fabrication lab, the only two-story building in Beta.
The engineering team has a magnetic slug thrower set up. We don't get between it and the target.
Maybe they won't even come this time, one of the others said. As if in answer, the uncanny chorus swelled. The overtones rang through each other, like a ship drive finding a hull's harmonic.
Philip shifted his weight from foot to foot and hefted his torch. Everything was too heavy here. He'd spent most of his life on ships, and the float or 1/3 G were his natural state.
When he accepted the job to join Mose and Desisiete at Beta, he'd expected 3 years down the well at most. Now, it looked more like a lifetime. And a lifetime that might not last until dawn.
Leeward's hand terminal chimed, and the team lead accepted the connection.
Evelyn Albert's voice came loud enough that Philip could make out every word.
Get your people in place. We have movement half a click out. North by northeast.
Understood, Leeward said, and dropped the connection.
He stared out at all of them, like an actor who'd just forgotten the St. Crispin's Day speech.
Get ready.
They moved toward the wall, and then through the access gate to the strip of cleared land outside it. The night sky was bright with stars and the wide disk of the Milky Way. With the autumn sun gone behind the horizon, the air cooled quickly, with a scent like mint and toilet cleanser. The atmosphere of Janna smelled nothing like Earth, the Earthers at Beta said. Take away the mint, and Philip thought it smelled a bit like a freshly scrubbed ship. None of that changed the fact that Philip and the torchbearers walking at his side were the invaders here. And he'd have argued for leaving again if there were a ship that could take them and any place to go. Instead, the walls, the darkness, and the rising howls of monsters outside. He tried to hear a difference in the chorus. He imagined the huge beasts hauling themselves up out of the dark soil like the ancient dead coming up from their graves. It seemed like the kind of thing that would have to change how they sang, but he couldn't be sure. He took his place outside the wall. To his right, a couple of women from the medical team. To his left, a young man named Kofi, with the long bones and just too large head that said he was another belter like Philip.
Hell of a thing, Kofi said.
Hell of a thing, Philip agreed.
In the west, a dim light glowed at the top of the mountain ridge, like a pale fire was burning there. It brightened and resolved into a crescent, smaller than Philip's thumbnail. It looked to him like inverted horns. All through the wide valley, the choir of alien voices stopped. Philip felt his heart start to labor. His head swam a little. The sudden silence made the valley feel as vast as space, but darker. The fear crept up the back of Philip's throat, and his hands gripping the torch ached.
Steady, he said under his breath. Steady, Koyo. Bist bien. Bist alles bien.
But it wasn't true. Everything was profoundly not fine. Leeward paced behind them, breath fluttering like the edge of panic. Then, from the darkness, a steady, heavy tramping that grew louder.
Time to dance, Yandro said.
A flare of orange fire sprang up to Philip's right, Yandro holding his lit torch.
Not yet, Leeward said.
But Yandro's team had already started lighting all of their torches, and the approaching footsteps were so loud, Philip had to agree. The others along the line set fire to the moss, and Philip did too. The belter beside him was struggling with the igniter, so Philip leaned his own fire close until the flames spread. The cleared space was a bright monochrome orange. Smoke stung Philip's eyes and throat. The first of them, loomed up out of the darkness. It stood higher than a building, at least any of the buildings on Beta. It moved with weirdly articulated shoulders and hips that seemed to ripple with every step, like there was a vastly complicated mechanism under the rough skin. Its head was little more than a knob, set low between its shoulders, comically flat. The eyes were black, two at the front and two on the sides, and its mouth curved up like an obscene, toothless grin. It lumbered forward into the light, seeming not to notice the line of flame and primates in front of it.
"Not straight on," Leeward said. "Turn it! Make it turn!"
The line to Philip's right surged forward, shouting and waving their torches. To his left, they hung back. In the center, he could go either way. The monster took a slow step, then paused as Yandro and his crew rushed at it from the side, screaming obscenities and threats. The monster's grin seemed to widen, and it trudged forward, the ground shaking under each step. Philip lifted his own torch and rushed in. The monster's smile was an accident of its physiology and evolution, but it still felt like the great beast was pleased to see them, or amused. Philip pressed himself in among the men, shouting and reaching up to thrust fire at the thing's dark eyes. The monster made a deep, fluting groan, and its next step angled away to the right, if only a little bit. A few degrees.
"Hold the line!" Leeward shouted over the roar of the torchbearers,
over Philip's own shout of victory.
"It's not over! Keep turning it!"
Philip pressed closer, waving the flame above him. Other bodies were with him, a mob of frightened mammals with the first glimmer of victory. It felt better than being drunk. Someone, maybe Philip, maybe not, touched the beast's skin with the fire and it shifted again. The shouting redoubled. There were more people in the crowd now, and the monster strode forward, its pace hardly changing, but its path bent until it was walking parallel to the town wall. Leeward was yanking them back one at a time.
"Let it go. It turned away. Just keep it going forward until it clears the corner."
But there was a kind of bloodlust. They'd made the thing that had frightened them before now bend to their will, and it was intoxicating. A knot of people pushed toward it, drawn like a tide by the gravitational pull of power. Here was the enemy, and their victory over it, even if the victory was just changing the direction it was walking. They waved the same fires, but now from spite and in triumph. The monster smiled its fixed smile and lumbered forward along the wall to the corner where Leeward and two of his people made a barrier and stopped the mob. The monster shifted its weirdly flat head, groaned a vast, shuddering groan, and turned back to its original heading, like it was following a star. They shouted as it moved off into the wildlands to the northwest of the town. Yandro picked up a rock in his offhand and threw it at the monster's wide retreating back, and the others laughed and howled. Their torches were starting to gutter.
"Regroup," Leeward said, waving them back toward their posts. "Everyone grab new torches. This isn't over. We have to be ready."
Philip trotted back to his place and handed off the failing torch to a young woman in a science team jumpsuit. As she ran back into the town to refresh the oily moss fire cap, someone shouted. If there were any words in it, they didn't matter. Philip couldn't make them out, but he knew what they meant. A second monster loomed out of the darkness. Its head was a little higher up on its shoulders, its skin a little more green. Philip shouted and tried to light his fresh torch, but the beast had already come closer. Every step made the earth shake the way dinosaurs and elephants were supposed to have, like a nightmare.
"Line up!" Leeward shouted. "Form the line!"
But it was too late. The people who had kept their torches burning and held their ground were clumped at the eastern end of the wall. The mob, like Philip and Yandro and the others, were just lighting up new ones on the west. A gap of darkness between the fires was guiding the monsters straight toward the thing they'd sworn to protect. Philip waved his torch at the lidless black eyes, but the flame was weak and pale. The monster moved forward and hunched its forelegs. When it rose, it was less like a jump than a weird unfurling of flesh, and it crashed down onto the wall with a sound louder than thunder. Somewhere nearby, Leeward was shouting, "We have a breach! We have a breach! We have a breach!" The same phrase over and over, like the disaster had turned him into a siren. The monster slid into the darkness of the town, and the sounds of destruction echoed back. Philip's mind jumped ahead, trying to think what they were losing. The medical center, the science barracks, the dry storage. "Get back to the line!" Leeward shouted, waving a torch in each hand. "Back to the line! Let the slug thrower take that one!"
"I don't hear it." That was Yandro. There was soot on his face, and his arm was red like it had been burned.
Philip didn't know how that had happened.
"Form up!"
Leeward said.
"He's right," Philip said. "The slug thrower's not firing."
"I don't know about that. It's not my job."
In the dark of the town, someone screamed.
"Fuck,"
Yandro said, then held out his hand toward Philip.
"Nagata, give me your torch."
Philip shifted it, dropping the handle into Yandro's wide palm. The chief of maintenance put the burning moss on the ground, scraping it off his boot like the flames were dog shit. The spike where the mat had been was 5 inches long, set at 90 degrees from the main shaft. Yandro banged the spike against the ground once, testing it.
"Form up!" Leeward shouted.
"Fuck yourself," Yandro said, like he was suggesting what kind of sandwich would go with Leeward's coffee.
The big man turned toward the new gap in the wall and started off at a long, loping run.
"I'll get him back," Philip said.
But it was more that he didn't have a torch now, and there was a monster loose in the town. He had to do something. The darkness and the destruction made the town unfamiliar. A wall lay across the pathway, peeled off its building. The wraith-thin body of Arkady Jones sat, back against a water recycler and head resting on their knees. The lights were off to keep anything from drawing the monsters in. It seemed like a fantasy protection now. If you can't see them, they can't see you. Philip's heart tapped fast against his chest, reminding him that it hadn't been built for this, that he was a belter down the well, that he was old. Ahead, a huge shadow moved against the darkness. Philip went toward it, not knowing what he meant to do when he got there. Only that was the problem, and it had to be solved. In the starlight and the faintness of the moon, all he could see was the wide, shifting back, the twin tails wider than both his legs together. The monster seemed to twitch like it had stumbled to the left. When it roared in pain. A spotlight went on at the top of the fabrication lab where the slug thrower was supposed to be. It tracked the monster as it shifted and stumbled toward the open ground of the town plaza. At first, Philip didn't understand what he was seeing. Yandro was on the thing's back, hunched down with his body pressed against it and one free hand banging the unlit torch against its head. The spike was dark and bright at the same time, wet with blood. Philip paused. Of all the places in the town, the plaza was the one with the least to destroy, the least that they couldn't rebuild or replace. Even so, he had to convince himself that Yandro had steered the monster, ridden it, where he'd wanted it to go. watching the huge man whip the titanium spike into the smiling monster's side, Philip felt something like awe. Human voices floated down from the top of the fabrication lab, and a fast, loud rattle cut through the chaos. A line of wounds drew themselves along the monster's flank, and it writhed in pain.
"Stop shooting!" Philip shouted. "You'll hit him!"
But Yandro had already jumped free. The monster shifted and turned, confused by the light and by the new pain. The blood that had sheeted down its side and poured from its eye and cheek was as red as anything Philip had seen, as red as a human's blood. Another shaking rattle, with better grouping now, a new wound opening on the beast like the slug thrower was a mining drill coring through its side. The monster raised its head and tried to sing again, but the sound that came out was choked and strained. It took another step forward, shifted, stepped back, and folded itself gently onto the bare dirt of the plaza, like it was stopping to take a nap. The eyes didn't close, but they went dull. Philip ran to Yandro, more than half expecting to find him dead. Instead, he was on his knees, swatting clouds of dust off his pant legs and grinning.
"Are you okay?" Philip asked. "You need a medic."
"I'm fine," Yandro said.
"You could have been killed, Koyo."
Yandro's grin widened, and he shrugged. The monster seemed to breathe out, some last trace of life escaping the corpse. Even dead, it was huge. Yandro bent down, grabbed the bloody pole, and tossed it back to Philip.
"Thanks for the borrow, yeah? Let's go show these pinche fuckers who's boss."
Jana's system was, had been, one of more than 1,300 connected to Sol and Laconia by the gate network. It had a middle-aged star and two planets in the Goldilocks zone, four gas giants strung out into the stars with clouds of moons around them, like little solar systems all their own, and a thin, disappointing asteroid belt. In the Gold Rush years, half a dozen different entities had put claims to the two life-sustaining worlds, until a disagreement over agricultural assay rights had escalated into a brief and mutually annihilating nuclear war, and the transport union had been forced to step in. For the better part of a decade, the system had been fourth or sixth or tenth priority for the corporate lawyers and union administrators, rights adjudication always moving forward without ever quite resolving. Then, the Laconian Empire had rolled through, smashed through the red tape with the iron fist of imperial fiat, and Emerling Voss Minerals and Financial Holding dusted off its blueprints. It was more than possible that somewhere in those plans, there had been a little square with a double line hashing one side that had meant temporary barracks. Or, more likely, general purpose room. Now it was 2.5 meter walls of prefabricated metal with yellow chips in the blue sealant and a patina that made them look dirty, no matter how much Philip scrubbed them. The ceiling had the same kind of full-spectrum work lights as the cabin on his last ship, the Reimer. And, inside the building's only room, two canvas cots. One was his. The other belonged to Mose, his supervisor. Diecisiete, the third of their three-person team, was in Alpha, if she was anywhere.
"Wake up," Mose said.
Philip turned on his cot and moaned.
"Wake up."
"Can't wake up," Philip said. "I died. Dead men don't wake up."
"You didn't die."
"Then why do I hurt so much?"
"Because you didn't die," Mose said with a long, wheezing laugh. "Dead men don't hurt. That's being alive."
"Could be in hell," Philip said.
By now, sleep had retreated, and all that was left was the ache and sense of fear.
Could be,
Mose said, but the laughter was less now. Philip rolled onto his side, and Mose put a plate on the cloth by his shoulder, textured protein and the last of their pepper sauce. With the state he was in, it even smelled good. He rose to sitting and took a spoonful. Mose stood, folding his wide arms.
Now you're done sleeping the day away, there's work to do.
Be right there, Philip replied, as if his work contract was still what it had been. As if the Rhymer was coming back to drop off the new crew and take them back up the well and out to the stars. It was a little piece of theater they played out between the two of them. Mose played at being the good boss. Philip played at being the diligent underling. He could hear in the way Mose talked that the act was wearing thin. It was wearing thin for everyone. Between them, Alpha and Beta were the whole human population of the planet and the majority of the people in the system. There was, Philip had heard, a prospector's ship on one of the watery moons of the second gas giant. If that was true, whoever they were needed to get their asses back down to the planet as quickly as they could, and then find a way to land. With the gate gone, the human population that mattered, that had any meaningful effect on any of them for the rest of their lives, had gone from tens of billions to under 2,000, maybe less. If they weren't careful, maybe a lot less. Philip finished his breakfast, scraping out the last bits of nutritional yeast and mushroom with his fingernail. The voices of the others filtered in from outside, and behind that, the clanging of a mallet on steel. He went to check his hand terminal, but it had been broken a week before, and there weren't any replacement parts. The fabrication lab could have built some, but the supply of reagents wasn't deep, and he didn't need a hand terminal anymore. He could just walk outside and look up to know the time of day, or consult with the weariness in his back to know how much rest he still needed. Of the seven worlds Philip had set foot on, all of them light gravity, two of them too heavy for him anyway, Janna had the most changeable skies. Some days it was an indigo so dark he could see the brightest stars at midday. Others, like today, it was a pale olive from horizon to horizon. The breeze was cool and musky, like one of the old water treatment plants on Ceres. The damage to the town was different in the daylight. Better because he could see it, and not just let his imagination tell him how bad it was. Worse, because he couldn't tell himself they'd gotten off light. The monster had stumbled through a storage building and the machine shop where the science team worked on their small fleet of prospecting drones. Both of the buildings were flattened. If it had kept on the path it started, it would have gone through all the barracks, and they'd have been digging graves for half the town. Instead, the corpse lay in the plaza, its flesh cut open, swarmed by the local carrion insects and biologists. Leeward paced among them, gesturing excitedly with his wide, blood-streaked hands. Philip scanned the crowds until he found Mose coordinating a salvage crew at the dead machine shop. Kofi was there too, and a broad-faced woman whose name was Alia or Adalia, something like that. With the Rhymer gone, it probably made sense to pay more attention to things like that now. Philip slid over, hands in his pockets, and looked over the mess. Kofi noticed him and lifted a hand in greeting.
Could have gone better,
Philip said, gesturing to the ruin with his chin.
Could have gone worse, too,
Mose said.
We lost some of the fine work machines, but if we pull this up careful enough, I bet we can reuse almost all of it.
I'll see if the welding rig's free.
Maybe, Alia said, and strode off. The patch on the back of her jumpsuit said she was maintenance, one of Yandro's crew. Philip looked back at the dead monster, and the men and women around it.
The ones who are working by talking a lot.
I see it too, Kofi said.
Yeah, Philip said. What can you do, though?
It was natural enough. The scientists and administrators were doing science and administration. The mechanics and workers were working with machines. Philip found a length of conduit and used it to scratch the itch between his shoulder blades. Up between the light olive sun and them, something huge and distant unfolded wide, curving wings and cast them all into shadow for a second. Mose spat on the ground.
Slug thrower got the fucker, yeah?
Philip considered the dead monster. The autopsy had peeled it down to bright pink bone and pale flesh. It looked only a little smaller than it had in the darkness. Its flat face still had the permanent smile, like it knew a joke the primates that had killed it didn't understand.
Took a while.
Misfired the first time, Mose said. That's what I was fixing before I came here. They had to ground out the main capacitor and bring the whole thing back up from battery.
Over-engineered and slapped together at the same time. He spat again.
Why we've been using old-fashioned explosive propellant guns since forever, Philip said. They're like sharks. We found a perfect design for killing the shit out of some coyo that needs it. Why change? Yeah, we used to have spaceships, too.
Spaceships and gun cartridges, both relics of their past.
Koyo in chemistry group says we can get saltpeter from the local guano. Seems like we should try. We do this first, Mose said with his supervisor voice. A woman broke off from the flock of administrators and scientists.
She was smaller than Philip, with light brown skin and a mane of tight curled hair that was auburn where it wasn't gray. She'd done his intake interview when he and Mose had arrived from Alpha. Her last name was a mouthful of Russian that sounded like a puppy falling downstairs, so everyone called her Nami Ve.
Moses, Philip.
She nodded to each of them as she said their names. She had a gift for making it feel like they were friends, and knowing everyone by name was part of it.
We're calling a town meeting tomorrow after dinner.
Yeah, Philip said.
It's to talk about everything we know so far about...
She looked back at the dead monster. About those, and planning for what we do next. It's important that everyone come.
We're not really part of all this, Mose said, shaking his head. Me and Filippito? We're subcontractors. Not permanent here.
Philip didn't know if Mose was fucking with her, or if that was really still how he thought of himself. Of them. At a guess, Mose wasn't 100% sure either. Nami Ve's smile was ready and real. It matters for everyone, so we want everyone to be part of it. Mose shrugged.
Okay, we can try. Not like we're going to be out at the dance hall.
Nami Ve laughed like it had been funny, put her hand on Mose's shoulder, and moved off to some maintenance group workers who were resetting a water purifier the monster had knocked down. When she was out of earshot, Mose chuckled.
I guess she can call town meetings now. Think we can all do that? Go tell the science leads that there's a thing they have to come to? Think we can all decide there's something on the schedule? Or is that just them?
Kofi smiled, but his eyes made him look angry.
Typical, yeah?
No problem Inners can't solve with more fucking meetings.
We don't go, Mose said, then turned to point at Philip particularly. That's the rule. If extra meetings aren't cleared by the union, we don't go. You give these bastards a millimeter, they'll take a click.
The union? Are you kidding? Philip asked, and then regretted it.
Mose's face went dark and his chin jutted forward.
You listen to me. You and me, we're union. That's the way it is. All this other shit doesn't change anything unless we let it. And we are not going to fucking let it. Never. You understand?
Kofi looked away, embarrassed.
Mose wasn't insane, but here he was shouting about getting something cleared by the union officers as if that could happen, as if the way things used to be had anything to do with how they were now. If he dropped his pants and started dancing with his ass out, it would have been just as connected to their current reality. Grief made people weird. At the corpse, Leeward was talking animatedly to a half dozen of the science team. Nami Vey was already halfway around the plaza, organizing whatever it was she was organizing, and Mose was staring at Philip with the kind of aggressive silence that could turn into a fight if he let it. Mose was 10 years younger than he was, and when he looked at Philip, he just saw an old belter technician with white in his beard and hair. He didn't see Philip as a threat, and Philip had put a lot of effort into keeping it like that.
I hear you, Philip said carefully.
We should probably get this thing salvaged, yeah?
Mose hoisted up his chin a degree more. Philip imagined slamming the conduit in his hands into Mose's face. The look of surprise the man would give him before he dropped. Instead, he let his own gaze fall, looking more submissive than he felt. It seemed to satisfy Mose.
Where the hell is Adia?
Mose muttered and stalked off, ready to vent at her. Philip dropped the conduit he'd been holding and started to pace off the ruins of the machine shop. Kofi fell in beside him. After a few seconds, the younger belter spoke.
Mose, he's...
Yeah, Philip agreed.
Lot of people shook. Strange times, okay?
Strange times.
And then, a moment later,
are you really going to sit out this town meeting because of the union?
No. 40 years could be a long time, or it could be hardly any time at all. Most often, it was both of those at once. Philip had taken this form of his name as a boy. The older he got, the more distance he had from his childhood, the stranger it became to him. 15 was the age when most people were taking their first contracts. He'd been leading terrorist raids that got people he knew and cared about killed, watching his mother throw herself out an airlock without a vac suit, helping his father commit genocide. Philip Inaros, he'd been then. And he'd fallen from grace and renamed himself Nagata. He could remember when all the sins of his childhood had felt like glorious virtue, but he couldn't get the feeling itself back. And then his father died, and the systems of law and commerce remade themselves, and he was just another face among billions. No one knew that he'd left before that final battle. The records of his desertion had been lost with the Free Navy. He was dead, and so he was free to move on with his life. That was the theory, anyway. The practice was more complex. He'd been angry, and he hadn't understood why, not for years. Even saying it aloud, "My father was a terrible man, and I helped him do terrible things," didn't carry the weight of it. He failed out of his first apprenticeship from having too many panic attacks. And the Philip Nagata name was a thin shield. If anyone looked too closely into him, they'd see past the paint. So he took other names, other pasts: Oscar Daxan, Tyr Saint, Ahel Morea. Somehow, though, he always gravitated back to Philip Nagata. His past was like a wound that wouldn't heal. Or a poison. Other people, they put together lives that followed from one thing to the next. Instead, he'd spent his life dodging justice that might not even have been looking for him, except in his head. That had been enough to break him. At 31 years old, he had been Tyr Saint for a year and a half, an unofficial part of a group marriage on a transport union colony ship, and in line for the chief mechanic's place when she retired.
For no reason he could fathom, he'd woken up one morning with an abyss of fear opening under him. He'd murdered billions. He'd seen his own friends die. They, whoever they were, would come for him. He'd dropped his identity at the next port and vanished, starting over again from nothing, never letting anything build. He took the work nobody wanted. Low pay, high risk, long contract. He signed onto the ships where people didn't talk about their pasts. He avoided any conversation about Marco Inaros or the Free Navy or the bombardment of Earth. And if anything ever went right for him, if he ever seemed in danger of gaining something he might be able to keep, he ran. Once he tried reading about the experience of child soldiers and the paths they'd taken through the trauma of their adult lives. Before he'd even finished the first half of the book, he'd descended into panic so deep that the ship medic had to put him on anti-seizure medications. He'd never tried again. 40 years could go fast that way. They could feel like 1,000. The Reimer was the latest in a long string. Philip Nagata had never dropped out long enough to lose his place in the Union, but his work history had long and inexplicable gaps in it. There were 1,000,000 work histories like it. Mental illness, addiction, religious or romantic fixation, families made and left behind. There were 1,000 reasons for moth-eaten careers like his, and there were slots on a ship like the Reimer for people like him. The ship's full name was Thomas the Reimer, and it was owned by a trade organization out of Barragán that catered to new and struggling colonies. For the first few years, he'd been on strictly as crew, as they carried work groups through 6 gates, dropped off people and equipment, or picked them up again to transfer off to other ships, other systems. When Laconia rolled through, the Reimer and her sister ships had gone from working for the Transport Union to the Association of Worlds without missing a beat. It didn't matter who was in power. They wanted someone doing the shit work that the Reimer made possible. Philip had been happy there, or at least not unhappy. He'd have kept his slot if 2 things hadn't happened. First, the XO had taken an inexplicable dislike to him, and second, the junior technician in Moses' work group had a heart attack 3 weeks after they'd passed through the Jana Gate. The company needed a replacement, and pulling from the Reimer's crew meant not having to spend the extra transit time. Philip needed off the ship, at least until the XO calmed down or shifted his paranoia elsewhere, and the gravity of the little planet was light enough that Philip could stand it without risking circulatory collapse. It had seemed like a good choice for everyone, and him most of all. He and Mose and Desisiete had delivered a solar power array to Alpha and spent a few months setting it up, troubleshooting it, and helping the locals work out the bugs. Desisiete had stayed in Alpha to track down a power drop, while Philip and Mose rode a supply shuttle to Beta and started the whole damn thing again. Philip could still picture the shuttle leaving them there, heading back to the relative metropolis of Alpha. There was a strange calm that had come from being at the edge of civilization, or maybe just past the edge. The news of the rest of the systems, the attack on Laconia, the loss of Medina Station, the eerie losses of consciousness that turned off minds everywhere, including Jana, were all things that had happened during his time in Alpha. And the other, stranger thing, the timeless stretch when all minds had smeared together like oil paints being mixed by a gigantic, uncaring thumb, had come when he and Mose had reached Beta. Philip's memory of that period was spotty and odd, like he was trying to recall the details of a dream too big to fit in his finite skull. When they'd all come back to themselves, the gate was dead. The Reimer was still weeks from its scheduled passage back, and both the ring and the ship were now gone forever. Someone on the astronomy team had spotted the ring falling sunward into a new long elliptical orbit, shoved out of its former place at the edge of the solar system by some unknown godlike hand. No one on Jana knew why. They never would. All the problems they had now, all the ones they ever would have, they'd have to work through here, alone. The sky darkened fast. A scattering of high, thin clouds clustered in the north, took the red of the sunset and turned it into gold leaf. The monster's corpse had been dragged off the plaza, but the place it had lain was black with blood. A cloud of local insects buzzed around the stain and ignored the people. The damage to the town was real, but the salvage and repair effort had left it less wounded. What had been the machine shop had become piles of salvage, squared away and ready for reuse. The new breach in the wall was shored up enough to keep the wildlife out. Just because the monsters could walk through it didn't mean that the other animals were welcome. The town kitchen had given out bowls of riced tofu and black sauce, some of the last of their supply, and Philip was finishing his now. The bowl was made of hardened and vacuum-formed vat-grown kelp. He'd eat that, too, when the tofu was gone. Every calorie and vitamin was so precious now that someone on the science team had suggested using calories as the basis of a new currency. At the edge of the plaza, Yandro and his crew were sitting together, laughing and talking louder than anyone else. They had what looked like beer. Since Yandro had ridden the monster down, he'd been treated like a hero and a badass, which, Philip figured, was fair enough. If the price of beer was hauling himself up on a monster's back while the bolt thrower on the fabrication lab shot holes in it, water was fine for him. Mose wasn't there. Probably he was back at the room, making his point about union rules to himself. Kofi was, along with a handful of other belters, sitting not far from Yandro and his crew. The scientists and administrators were sitting in clumps of their own, except for Nami Vey, who circulated from group to group to group, talking to everyone, touching shoulders and arms, smiling like she was running for office. As the early evening sun continued to drop, the golden clouds flared and faded to gray. Philip took a bite of the bowl. It was crisp and layered and salty, like baklava without the sweetness. He chewed and watched Nami Vey approach. "Philip," she said, "long day. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate everyone showing up. Mose won't be here. But he doesn't mean anything by it. He's just working some things through, you know." Her smile dimmed a little. "I think we all are." "Yeah," Philip said. She looked for some way to touch him without it seeming awkward, didn't find one, and moved on. The relief he felt as she walked away surprised him. He didn't dislike her. Her kindness seemed a little too consistent to be real, sure, but it wasn't her that bothered him. It was talking. That bothered him because he was trying to listen. And he was listening for the monsters, singing. So far, they were silent. At the front of the plaza, Leeward hauled out a little metal bench and a holographic projector. From where Philip sat, he could see the science lead's lips moving, practicing. There were probably 400 people in the plaza. Almost everyone. Philip shifted. His leg was falling asleep. Leeward stepped up awkwardly, holding his palms out to ask for quiet, or to demand it. "Everybody?" he said, and while it was inflected like a question, it wasn't one. "Everybody, thank you all for coming here tonight. I know we've all been through a lot, and I wanted to start by saying how much I appreciate everything all of you have done.
The sunset was dimming fast. It was hard to make out the expressions of people across the plaza, but Philip thought he saw Nami Vey shake her head just a little.
We've learned a lot. We know a lot more than we did before, and it's really going to help.
He nodded as he spoke.
Someone to Philip's right muttered something. Someone else laughed. Leeward's smile widened.
Beta's site was selected based on a slate of criteria. Water availability, shelter from major weather patterns, so on.
He took out his hand terminal, tapped it, and the projector came to life. A topographical map of the valley sprang into slightly fuzzy existence, with a red ball the size of a fist where the town was.
Philip leaned forward, considering the shape of the hills.
All the reasons this is an attractive site for us, Leeward said.
He was getting his rhythm. He sounded like a university lecturer.
They also make it attractive for the locals. We knew that. Biosample diversity was a plus for us. But we didn't know about the size of some of the local fauna, or that we were setting down roots pretty much exactly in its migratory path.
One of the communications team stood up, raising her hand.
So the monsters aren't attacking us? We're just in their way?
Turns out we built our houses in their hallway. But that makes a solution pretty straightforward.
Leeward flexed his wide hands and tapped his hand terminal again. The red ball that was Beta was joined by a green one halfway up a nearby slope.
One of the tertiary sites that we didn't pick is close enough that we can relocate, even without the shuttle.
Philip felt himself sink. He glanced around at the town, the structures for more than 400 people to work and live. The recyclers, the reactor, the power grid. It was all designed to travel in the hold of a colony ship. Easy to take apart, easy to put together. Easy meaning maybe not impossible. He thought of the conduit that he and Mose had put in place, the wire and vacuum channeling they'd laid down. Relocation would go faster if the whole town was focused on the task, but the prospect left him weary all the same. It wasn't until someone else interrupted that he noticed that Leeward had kept talking. Yandro was standing in the middle of the holographic display, gesturing between the two versions of Beta, the real and the imagined. Philip had missed whatever the start of his comment had been.
I mean, that's got to be half a click up, yeah?
That's true, Leeward said. But the carts were all built with a full G in mind. They're pretty robust for this kind of short-distance travel, and there are game trails that the local animals have made that we can appropriate.
Yandro looked around at the crowd.
The stars had come out above them to compete with the work lights and the backscatter of the display.
Yandro shook his head slowly, crossed his arms.
This is a bad plan, boss.
We've run the numbers, Leeward said. The whole move won't take more than 5 days, start to finish. That sounded optimistic to Philip, and probably to many of the others sitting under the stars. He'd probably picked a low number to make the whole thing sound feasible. But it was so overly optimistic that it made everything else Leeward had said seem a little more suspect.
Nami Vey stepped up to the bench, smiling and holding out her hand to Leeward like she was doing him a favor by helping him down. He hesitated for a moment, then let her take his place.
Can you share more of what you're thinking, Alejandro? Nami Vey said. This is a big decision, and we don't have a lot of time to make it. Anyone who has thoughts about this, it's important that we hear from you. That's what this meeting is for.
When Yandro spoke, his voice had less of a buzz in it.
Here's the thing. We're talking about taking down everything. All of it. And then putting it back up. Every time we do that, we risk breaking something. It's just wear and tear, yeah? And that's if these big fuckers don't come while we're in the middle of the shift.
Look at how much it would take to move. And instead, we put that work into making what we already have a harder target. Dig some trenches. Put some spikes in them. Get that slug thrower tested out better. Get the chem lab to cook us up some gunpowder. Some bombs, maybe. These big fuckers bleed. They die. We can teach them not to fuck with us. Fortification is less effort at first, but it's also a commitment to permanent upkeep, Leeward said. Relocation, we do once, and then we can get back to our routine.
Unless there's something at the news site we don't know about, like we didn't hear.
These are interesting questions, Nami Vey said. John Lee, one of the recycler techs, stood up, and Nami pointed to him.
What about water availability? We chose this spot for reasons. What would we be giving up if we went?
I can speak to that, a younger woman in a research team jacket said. The tertiary site is on a creek that feeds down into the valley. We'd be seeing a reduction in overall flow compared to the river, but it's still more than we need in the near term.
Even with the recyclers?
Recyclers, hydroponics, cooling, even some secondary energy production for when the reactor runs out of fuel pellets. The new site's enough for all of it.
Philip listened and watched, but didn't take a turn standing up. He'd spent a lot of his life trying not to get noticed, and there were more than enough opinions to go around. About half of it, it seemed to him, was really about the monsters and their migration paths. The rest was about fear. Fear of the monsters. Fear of what had happened with the gate and what it meant for them. Fear of losing what little they still had left. Philip understood, because he felt it too. It was close to midnight when Nami Vey called a halt to the proceedings, told everyone to go get some sleep and think about what they'd heard. They'd take a vote in the morning. Philip joined the line at the latrine, then went back to his cot without changing clothes. Mose was watching something on his hand terminal that had a man in a bright red suit getting into a floridly choreographed gun battle in what was supposed to be Ceres Station but looked more like a cave network on Callisto. It occurred to Philip that the entertainment feeds saved on the local system were the only ones they'd ever have, unless the data went corrupt. Then they wouldn't have the man in the red suit either.
You went to the meeting, Mose said coolly as Philip curled under his blanket.
I did.
I told you not to.
I know you did.
You went anyway.
Yeah.
Philip waited to see where Mose took it from here. He didn't think he'd push the issue, but times were odd. Things came out sideways sometimes. He almost thought the other man had gone back to his feed or turned over to try to sleep when he spoke.
I'm not going to bullshit you, Nagata. I'm going to have to report that. If I don't, and the union finds out, that's my balls in a sling.
Okay.
Okay, Mose echoed. And then, I can maybe make it better if you report in, though. Like you were there to keep an eye on these assholes.
What happened?
Everyone debated about whether to move the town out of the way or dig in and try fighting the monsters off. The science teams like moving. The technical staff lean toward punching it out. There's going to be a vote at breakfast.
Shit, Mose said.
Well, I guess we'll see what the plan is tomorrow.
Philip rolled onto his back, looking up at the featureless gray of the ceiling. He thought of Leeward's map and the crowd sitting close to Yandro. The black mark where the monster's blood stained the earth. He remembered his mother saying, "The only right you have with anyone in this life is the right to walk away." He thought about his father's need to frame everything as an epic struggle between himself and the universe. He pictured Nami Vey's calm, sweet voice and Yandro's angry growl, and knew which way the vote would go. Stay and fight has some good points.
but it doesn't have the votes. We're going to move the town.
You sure about that?
I am, Philip said. When morning came, he was right. And he wasn't. After the vote, Leeward and six of the civil engineering and administrative work groups, Nami Ve among them, headed out to review the new site and the paths they could use to reach it. The rest of the town got to work. Philip and Mose, Beta's only local experts on the power grid, took 2 hours isolating lines and preparing the pocket reactor for shutdown. When they'd gone as far as they could, Mose went to help with the medical bay equipment, and Philip headed over to where a half dozen of the long timers were breaking down the food production units. It was a simple enough setup. In the depths of space, a ship's galley could use water and energy to cultivate textured fungus that, with the right compounds and spices, the system could use to mimic a wide range of foods, some with better fidelity than others. In Beta, they had 50 separate meter-long cylinder units mounted in steel racks. The power regulation on them could be tricky. The capacitor design was kind of shitty, and more than one untrained person had died from misunderstanding the caution warnings on the little red box, so Philip took that part of the job himself. If half of the cylinders went down, the town would still have enough to eat. The fabrication lab could probably keep these in replacement spare parts for 6 years. It sounded like a long time, until Philip started thinking about what they'd need in year 7. Then, it seemed very soon. The person overseeing the breakdown was named Jackson, thin as a belter, but with a Laconian accent. They were a contractor, just like him and Mose, but with a different company. Jackson's plan was to break down half the units, install them at the new site, and then come back for the rest.
"If we can get a pinche cart to carry them on," they said with a scowl. "Can someone go find a cart?"
One of the others, a younger man named Cameron, jogged off looking for Yandro and his maintenance crew. Philip shifted the power couples off the unit he'd been working on, but before he could start on the next, Jackson put a hand on his shoulder and shook their head. They had wide lips and a narrow nose that Philip might have found attractive in other circumstances. The barely restrained annoyance Jackson gave off any time they looked at him reassured him his interest was irrelevant anyway.
"No point if we can't get them on carts," Jackson said. "You can strap one of these fuckers on your back, okay, but you better really fucking want it."
Philip chuckled and went to clean his hands. All around the settlement, people were at work breaking down what they had. He'd only been there a couple months. There had been people living in Beta for much longer than him. Still, it felt a little like seeing an old ship getting scrapped. There was a loss to it. He found Mose sitting outside the medical bay. One of the walls had been unhitched and the guts of the bay left open to the breeze. Philip shrugged his question.
"Need some tie-downs," Mose said. "I get the feeling people weren't expecting to take the place down and haul it halfway up a mountain."
"We'll figure it out," Philip said.
"Desisiete is going to laugh about this when she gets here," Mose said. "Those fuckers at Alpha better get their radio back up, or when the shuttle comes, they're going to piss themselves. Whole place just..."
Mose whistled between his teeth and swept one flat hand like he was erasing the town. Philip sat. The ground was a little damp. It smelled like potting soil and citrus and the ever-present note of toilet cleanser. Mose chuckled to himself.
"Yeah, Desisiete is gonna laugh."
And then, softly, "When we're done here, I'm taking us back to Alpha. Whole team.
That's an established colony. This penny ante bullshit, it's no way to live. Alpha's better."
Philip nodded. There was a pleading tone in Mose's voice. He recognized it. It was the same sound people had when a ship went unexpectedly dark. The universe
wasn't kind. There were millions of things that could go wrong. Every now and then, a ship hit a micrometeor or had some cascade failure they couldn't catch in time. Every now and then, a colony or station got surprised by an accident. Sometimes, apparently, ring gates went dead. Whole civilizations, billions of people wide, pared down to a few hundred between one day and the next. Look at it that way, and Mose wasn't having a psychological breakdown. He was just thinking things through, out loud. Catching up to a universe that had changed faster than he could, and didn't give a fuck if anyone kept up or not.
She'll laugh, Philip agreed.
Down near the food pods, Cameron was back and talking animatedly to Jackson. Philip couldn't tell what he was saying, but he kept pointing north and shaking his head. Philip scratched his neck, even though it didn't itch.
Hey, he said, I'll be right back.
Whatever, Mose replied.
Where the fuck am I going to go?
Philip went toward the north end of the settlement. Three other teams were busy breaking down structures and piling up supplies. Beta was packing to move, but no one was moving yet. Even where crates and spools were ready to load, they weren't loaded. The protective wall was broken in two places now, where the monsters had lumbered through it. Philip walked slowly, looking for whatever Jackson and Cameron had been talking about. He heard it before he saw it. Voices raised outside the wall. It wasn't anger or laughter, but loud all the same. The shouts of people coordinating with each other. Work voices. Philip lifted himself over a low spot in the broken wall. The carts were there. Past the wall, he could hear their motors whirring and straining, and the whine made him wonder what they'd do when the bearings wore out. For now, they all seemed fine, lumbering along or parked. Great loads of dark soil were heaped up in two of them. The yellow metal was streaked with mud. The workers that crewed them were streaked with mud, too. They carried shovels. And from one end of the town, almost halfway to the other, a deep gouge ran through the earth, 3 meters wide and a meter deep, the displaced earth piled in a berm between the hole and the town wall. The smell of fresh-turned soil was thick and weirdly astringent. Philip strolled toward the workers, his hands in his pockets. They were all maintenance and construction, Yandro's crews. One woman saw him and nodded sharply, as much a challenge as a greeting. Philip smiled and nodded back.
Nagata.
Yandro, lumbering up beside him, was a mess. Mud caked his legs to the middle of his thighs and smeared his arms and chest. When he grinned, Philip noticed that one of his eye teeth was chipped. He hadn't seen that before. He found himself very aware of the physical size of the man. The strength, the sense of ease, and a deep maleness that wasn't a threat, unless it was.
Yandro? Philip said.
And when Yandro only grunted in reply,
lot of work.
Yeah, figure about 4 passes, so about twice this wide and twice this deep. Build up the hill on the side. I figure we use the mud and some of that shit that looks like grass, make bricks. Lace plating doesn't stop these fuckers, but make a hill steep enough? They'll get tired and go around, same as anyone.
Yandro shrugged like he was commenting on all he'd just said and leaned a little forward, waiting. Philip wasn't sure that he wanted to be the one who said the next thing, but he was the one who was there.
The plan was that we move the town, though, yeah?
That's a bad plan.
Better that we do this.
They were quiet for a moment, looking out over the growing ditch. The maintenance crew working and shouting. Philip wondered what would happen if he made it into a confrontation. He thought of Mose saying, we're subcontractors.
That wasn't exactly right, but he wasn't the one who'd called the town meeting or held the vote. Nobody had elected him to be in charge of anything. Yandro shifted his weight again, stretched his shoulders. His smile was friendly enough, but it was friendly with an edge, like milk that was just starting to go bad.
"Well," Philip said with a nod, then turned to amble back into town. A few others passed him, heading the other way. The news getting out. He kept his eyes down as he walked. His jaw ached.